Yo, welcome to Mind Your High Speakeeping. What was that? How was that?
What's up?
Welcome to Mind Your High Beekeeping. I am your host, Greg Lehman. I'm here with my lovely wife, Kara Jo.
Hello.
This is episode 15. It is May 7th, the year 2022.
It is cold and rainy.
Kara's here making some, what are you making, shampoo?
Shampoo bars,
hell yeah. We should talk about that later.
Yeah.
We have a fun idea to keep listening. Maybe something cool might happen mid-episode.
Perhaps, if you're lucky.
If you can hear in the background, there is some ruckus.
Little baby chicks.
We got little baby chicks.
Yeah, they're so cute.
We got them a week ago or like a week and a couple days ago. They're like 1 week old. One of them's 3 weeks old, but...
Now they're 2 weeks old.
Yeah, so we got four 1 week old. Yo, tell them about day one when we got...
Yeah, so it's funny because I said to Greg today, I'm like, is this what happened? Like, is this what having like three kids is like? Like the first time you get baby chicks, you're like, oh my God, like trying to do everything. And then the second round, you're like, yeah, whatever. And now you're like, it's fine. You're here.
We got this.
Yeah, so come home. Greg had got them during the day. Come home from work. Baby chicks. I'm like holding them and loving them. And I pick one up and she just is like sleeping in my hand.
More, like, way more than usual.
Yeah. Well, at first I was just like, oh my God, this is my favorite. Yeah. Meanwhile, she's like sick. And I put her down and she like, if you have chickens, which a lot of people that have bees have chickens.
There's a huge crossover of chicken and bee people.
Yeah, just that.
Hell yeah.
That life. She's looking like she's bathing in the sun and she's like splayed out. And I'm like, maybe she's just trying to get warm. And then she's like kind of standing up, but she looks like she's like completely drunk. And
yeah, she was a little like Mortal Kombat stance, you know, that little like
real slow motion, yeah. And
chickens are kind of like bees when it comes to like, you see a hive that's different than the other hives. You got to think what's going on here. You know, it's that pattern recognition thing.
So, I have NutriDrench on hand. If you own chickens, you should have NutriDrench on hand. It has saved so many chickens' lives.
Yeah, NutriDrench. You know,
it's good for chicks. It's great for, I mean, any age. And you can give it to them in their water. Oh, they're making a lot of noise right now. And you can also just give them direct.
This is because one of them was standing on another one.
You can give them like direct, like droplet into their mouth. And so I just picked her up and I did that. And she was chirping and it was actually kind of easy, but they're so little. So like a hen and you're trying to put something in her mouth, you can kind of be a little rough. Them. A baby chick that's a week old, it was totally different. But I gave her that. I gave her some water. I gave her some yolk. And
so egg yolk.
Oh, this is cool.
I just like that.
Yeah.
So the egg yolk is actually the stomach of a chicken forms around the egg yolk. And then, what we know is the egg yolk, or what is the egg yolk. But when they're born, the egg yolk is in their stomach and that's what feeds them for the first like X amount of days.
That's why chickens love eggs.
So they're just naturally drawn to loving eggs. Yeah.
And she wasn't really eating. And so I did everything I could and I put her back and I just thought she was going to die. So I walked away. I didn't want to see it. And like 20 minutes later, Greg comes over and he's like, oh, the baby chick's fine. I'm like, no, I think you are looking at the wrong one. He was like, no, they're all fine. And she's fine. So
knock on wood.
I mean,
I don't even know which one she is anymore.
I do, but I mean, I've been known to save a chicken or two.
Kara's a little chicken whisperer.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
I mean, when people get chickens, I'm like, feel free to call Kara. She's going through some shit.
Yeah, it's just all you have to do is research. I mean, backyard chickens.
Backyard chickens, that website, or whatever you call that blog.
Forum.
Such good information. People care.
Yeah. So NutriDrench, if you have chickens, have it on hand. You just never know. Plus it's just good. It's vitamins and minerals or something like that. And it just goes, when you put it directly in their mouth, it goes directly in their bloodstream.
If you hear a little chirps in the background, baby chicks,
yeah,
or maybe one's just like sitting on my shoulder right now.
They're here, which Greg has been known to have a chicken in his pocket.
All right. So I got to give a shout out to...
Oh yeah, something cool happened this week.
Yeah, just like, you know, I feel like we're all kind of struggling right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people struggling and I don't know. There's this like vibe in the air, at least in our circles, where Some people are going through some shit. And I wasn't having the best morning just for whatever reason. And then I start getting text messages and they're like, hey, Preston and Steve just mentioned you on Marissa just mentioned you on Preston and Steve on WMMR. I'm like, what?
Which is the morning show around here.
Yeah, it's like a Philadelphia. Like
it's the number one show. Awesome. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So anyway, so I then get like the pod. They release the whole episode at the end, so I was able to listen to it. So check it out.
I have a podcast for Claire to listen to. Do you guys remember Greg? He used to work for Victory. He now works for Forest of Maine. Really tall guy, would always come out to Cardboard Classic.
Yes, right, yes, yeah.
So him and his wife have been beekeepers for years. During the pandemic, they started a podcast called Mind Your Hives Beekeeping.
Nice.
And she actually makes skincare out of the honey from there. And they're fun follow because, you know, he'll put the bees on them and just kind of like let them sting or kind of see the reaction. So they are almost their pets. Like, you know, they're of their family.
It's weird.
I could just keep listening to them. They're way better at this than we are. But that was so nice that they like just gave us a little shout out. So the backstory on that is Steve of Preston and Steve, him and his wife. His wife just got their first beehives and she joined a beekeepers association. She's taking classes. She has a mentor. Like I was so happy.
I was listening to it and I'm like, this woman is doing it right because like I am not really.
When people start talking about becoming beekeepers, it's like, usually real cringy.
Yeah. I'm like, don't do
it. When we first started. I'm sure there were some cringy. I know there were some cringy 100%. In hindsight, but hearing somebody doing it right really makes me happy.
Yeah, she is.
And just like super shout out to Marissa Magnata, who's the producer over there. And just like one of the nicest people, I think. I mean, I call her my friend, but she might have the most friends of anybody
probably
I've ever met.
She's probably pretty popular.
She's great. She's got... dude, she has like a show coming out on NBC.
Oh, nice.
It's her golfing. I think she just started golfing and they're like following her around.
It's called
Make Golf Your Thing. and it's on NBC Philly or Inside Golf TV.
Nice.
And then she has a podcast called Delicious City Philly. Delicious City Podcast. It's all about Philadelphia eating.
Mm.
This is really great chef Eli. It's like a very much like, wow, these are like the 20 new openings of restaurants and they talk about it and they're like favorite dishes. It's a good like hour listen for sure.
Sweet.
But yeah, that was sweet. That like totally made our day.
Yeah. They didn't know who you were until they were like the really tall guy. And they're like, oh yeah. We know that guy.
And then right after that, our buddy Alan called in and was like, hey, I'm a beekeeper. And they talked to Alan for a while. Over at Yerkes Honey, Yerkes.
That's his.
Yeah, he does. Okay. If you're in the Pennsylvania area, he does like the cutouts and all of the craziness that happens when bees get in your attic and yada, yada, yada. He's a contractor, but like a really great bee remover.
And
which leads to a sad story.
Yeah. So like Greg was there at a cutout. We'd never really done cutouts or anything like that. It's like, oh, there's this complicated bee swarm. You guys catch swarms. I'm like, not those kind of swarms. We don't.
So a buddy of ours was like, hey, there's a contractor that just bought this like his old historic property. And they just realized that they've got bees in the ceiling. He's going to do all the contractor work. His contractor will be there. Can you come and just help, you know, on the beekeeper side of it? And our buddy was like, you know, something I think I could probably do myself, but I've never done it. So like, let's just put our heads together. And I was like, this sounds like a cool opportunity.
Yeah. It's good experience.
Yeah. Anytime this would come up, I'm not going to be the guy that does the cutting of the wall out and like makes a decision on what joist you can cut. Like, I'm not going to be that guy, but if somebody's there doing it and I can go do this, I'll try it out.
Yeah. So we got we picked up a heat.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to our buddy camera. Robert. He let me borrow a FLIR camera, FLIR. It hooks actually into your iPhone, and it's like a very detailed thermo camera. I think it's badass.
They're pretty expensive.
$400.
Okay, that's not. I thought they were more than that.
I mean, it's $400.
But it worked. You thought it worked like well.
It showed us like exactly where it was and where we could cut out in the ceiling, and then we realized we had to go to the outside of the third. It was on the top of the third floor of like, it was 35, 40 feet up. They had a lift. Yeah. That three of us could, they were like 600 pound limit. I'm like, I'm like 270. Yo. And they're like, yeah, I'm only like 180. I'm like, that's not buying us little. Enough, yeah. But he's not, he's like 180. I was like, Steve's 115. He's like, I'm up to 180. 'Cause of COVID times.
Good for him.
So we were overweight, but it was really, it sucked. So we get out there, we get to cut out the side of this building and boom, it's right there. We start taking comb out. And first thing I notice, we find swarm cells that are just capped. And I'm like, oh shit. I think the reason they even saw the swarm, the bees up there, is because that they probably swarmed.
Yeah.
And drew their eyes to it rather than just like one bee going in and out of a, you know, high corner of a house. I don't know. But I'm like, shit, I think they might have swarmed, which changes the whole thing. You know,
right, because you're not going to find a queen.
You're not just going to find a queen and then move them over. And it's not a situation. This is a house built in 1850. And it's not like you can't just cut these sections out. It was like they had made this hive. It had to have been 20 plus years that they've been going there, dying. So a swarm moving in, dying. Like, it was just this really, really old comb. I'm pretty sure there was asbestos all around it. Like,
oh, you didn't even say that.
It was pretty gnarly. But we start pulling the comb out, and there's a bunch of brood, a lot of drone brood, but a bunch of brood. And I mean, this is old, old, old comb. Like, there's not even beeswax to it. And I'm looking down, I'm starting to look at the bees. I'm seeing mites on the outside of bees visible pretty clearly.
And
like,
if you
right
can
away,
see
my
that
eyes
much,
are seeing mites. I'm like, oh, shit. But I don't get overly. I'm like, okay, well, maybe they can like handle their shit.
Right.
Like, this is, some people would say if a hive is alive that has that many mites, there's something beneficial to it. I don't necessarily agree because they vector disease to native pollinators, but whatever. I could see that being a thing. And then I start seeing deformed wing virus all over the place. I'm like, all right. So, like, you know, paramedic mite syndrome, you could call it, just like, you know, the mites are. These bees are diseased, and you can see why. And then I'm seeing Israeli acute paralysis virus, which is like these really shiny bees that like aren't very good at walking around.
Well,
like,
they can't fly.
They're not flying.
You will know if you see Israeli acute paralysis because it looks like the bees have been dipped in oil. It's obvious.
They're really, really shiny.
Like, you see it, you know.
There's bald bees, and then there's shiny Israeli acute paralysis
virus.
It's
not even the same.
It's one of those things when you see it, you go like, oh, yeah, I get what you're saying now.
And also to test it, you can pick up a bee and like drop it, and if they just drop to the ground, they can't fly.
Yeah.
You'll see a lot of bees just on the ground crawling around. So,
and that's not actually passed through mites.
No, that's genetic.
It's genetic.
Yeah.
Which is, means that the queen is putting this out there, which means you got to do a full queen replacement.
Right.
To keep them going. But we can't find a queen. We're seeing swarm cells. We got disease bees everywhere. And I made the decision. We weren't finding the queen. It was going to be a trap out situation where, like, you might be killing a lot of these bees no matter what. Or I don't even know how they would have possibly been able to get this out of this house. I mean, it's literally made of like trees, not 2x4s.
Cool.
Cool. And then covered in stone.
Right. I know. It looked beautiful.
I mean, unreal. And for the first, I had to make the decision that we had to kill those bees. And, you know, it sucked. It was the first time we've ever done that.
Yeah. I mean, that's awful. Because I was like, oh, is it still going well? And Greg's like, yeah, it was never going well, Kara. I was like, ugh.
But we learned a lot. And like, I feel like I don't know of I don't know how to make that another decision there. Out of everything we've learned and everything we preach, it was the move.
Yeah. I mean, it sounded like you made the right decision. So you brought home a lot of comb.
Yeah, I brought it all home because I was like, you know what, I think I could compost this. And I'm like, wait, is this a good idea to like allow our bees to interact with?
So it was in a big bin. I love that you were like trying to salvage it in some way. And then our bees started going in, and I was like,
I gave a bunch of the chickens.
Yeah, we did. They loved it. And then our bees are starting to go in. I'm like, wait, you just said that this was like so diseased and all kinds of gross. So I close it up and I'm like, but there were bees emerging from the comb. It was just such an awful situation. And then they're just stuck in this bin. And I was like,
dude, they're emerging. You can see the mites on them when they're emerging.
So sad. So
you can see deformed wing virus.
Before this rainy couple days happened, I was like, I think we just got to burn it. Like, and that's like the least, it's the most humane thing for the bees too, I thought, yeah. Because otherwise they're just going to.
So, all right. Comb starts out beeswax, yeah. And it's all beeswax. There, it was like no beeswax.
Yeah, so this is cool. All the
cocoons.
Yeah, so I think we mentioned this before, but when you're uncapping comb for honey, like sometimes you'll get a frame that's like real dark.
Real dark brown,
and
blackish.
And you try to cut it and you can't.
Yeah, you have to like saw it, but it's not melting cut.
Yeah, and so what that is it's no longer beeswax, it's cocoons. So every time, you know, they cap and then a larva grows, they spin a cocoon that by doing somersaults.
And it's made of
silk and poop. Silk basically. And poop. Yeah, basically. It's like three different colors of poop. Anal leakage or something. That's what it said.
I didn't know that was going to happen.
What, me say anal leakage? And so, yeah, they make cocoons and then they obviously emerge and then... But the next like egg is laid, hatches, they spin a cocoon. So what eventually happens is the cell not only is getting smaller, but also the wax, I guess, it's just being overtaken by cocoon.
Smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
They were such small bees.
Yeah.
They were tiny. And the dude I was with goes, man, these bees are so small. And I go, the older the comb, the smaller the bee, because they shed and it just, you know, it takes up space.
Yeah, they don't.
And it was so crazy visible in those bees. They were so clearly tiny.
Not
like tiny, but
so
like
what we do
considerably
is,
different.
Yeah, when we come across that type of comb, when we have,
if it's
when we
on
cap, we just take it all off.
Yeah, if it's on foundation. Wait for like a 90-degree day, put it out on the sidewalk, it gets melt, and just take a scraper, like a putty scraper, and whoosh, scrapes right off.
Yeah.
Super easy.
And then put it in the compost. Because even if you try to melt it down anyway, that's going to be that it's like just, slum gum that you
yeah,
just can't
gunky
get.
Grossness.
Yeah. And it's a good way to like get rid of, you know, have them rebuild and stuff.
Yeah, so a lot of pesticides are stored in that as well. They find pesticide residue. They're finding pesticides that were banned 50 years ago, residue in comb now.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's not a good look. not at all. So even more of a reason for us to, you know, cycle through. They, I don't know who they is, but I'll just say they tell us to...
Bee scientists.
Every 3 years you cycle through your comb. I'm not going to say we do that. I think we probably are more like every 5 or 6 years how much we cycle through. But we're also growing at such a rapid rate right now. It's hard to really judge it. But there's a good amount of comb. Like I have a bunch of boxes downstairs that I keep like when I take frames out of the freezer, I stack them in our basement. We also spray that like bacillus stuff on them. But, I look at it as I'm filling boxes to take back out to the hives now. And I go, I'm going to set that aside. And there's a good number of boxes down there that I think we're going to just scrape off.
Yeah. And then we'll get some beeswax. So that's cool. But, yeah. Okay. So I was like, Greg, I just think we got to burn it. And so we built a fire and I couldn't even watch, like, but we got really hot and, to try to be quick about it. And, but the crazy thing was because it wasn't beeswax, it wasn't melting.
It wasn't burning. Dude, I took out, so we have the, of those infrared gun camera,
temperature thermometer
Johns. I actually have it out because, Kara uses it for Kara Joe all the time.
For soap, yeah.
But I had it out because I've been checking the temperature of where our chickens like to be.
Our baby chicks.
Because about every week they're alive, they can be colder by about 5 degrees, but like in the beginning it's like 90 to 95 degrees. And then, you know, by week four, it's like 75, 80. So I went and grabbed it and the cocoon comb, it was 900 degrees in the fire and it was just chilling there. Like, what's up? No big deal.
Yeah. Glowing red, but not
melting,
not breaking,
combusting.
Yeah. No, it didn't combust.
And then at 1024 and I think the thermometer caps out like 1200. So it just started giving a weird error reading. It combusted and burned up, but it was like, oh my God, like that shit is strong. That's strong shit.
That's some literally.
Yeah, dude. So I think people should make their couches out of it or something, you know, like really fireproof curtains. We could use bee poop cocoon curtains.
Silk. I mean, they'd be fancy. Silk poop curtains.
Come on, silk poop curtains?
Yeah, we could dye it.
I think we're on to something here.
Clearly, don't steal our ideas, guys.
All right, so just because we're saying it and now it's our idea, we said it. It's
intellectual property.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so, but I think...
That sucked.
But here's the deal.
We made the right decision. I feel like we made the right decision.
Yeah, we did. And the thing is if, I mean, if you have animals, you know, like the husbandry kind of
role
that you have to take in
don't humanize
stewarding everything. Yeah. You have to make tough decisions sometimes. And sometimes people are probably listening. They're like, who cares, guys? Just burn it. Like,
dude, you want to talk about tough decisions? This is, I kind of sound dumb, but so Kara, it's springtime. It finally is springtime. We've been walking around this property that we're at.
And we're learning everything. It's fun. Going on nature walks.
Taking out the Seek app and just seeing these things that are blooming and being able to find what the species?
Sure.
Whatever, yeah. What type of tree it is or bush or flower or plant, grass, whatever. And just learning about all this stuff. And we're like, oh man, this is non-native. It's kind of like out competing this other thing that's native. Like right now, crabapple is boomtown.
Yeah, it's just at the end, but God, has crabapple been beautiful. Yeah.
But crabapple native, right? There's a bunch of different kinds, but the one we are seeing mostly is native, which is awesome. But then there's autumn olive? Mm-hmm. Russian?
Autumn olive.
Autumn olive is growing next to a ton of it, and it's out competing.
And like we have native dogwoods here. So here's
a lot of native cedar.
Yeah. Yeah. All kinds of stuff. Yeah, willow. Pussy willow.
Pussy willow. Yes. Correct.
What is that other? Black haw. So, okay. So we have native and then we have obviously non-native. And
some of these non-natives are putting out some killer flowers right now.
Yeah.
And are pumping nectar.
Right. So we talk about this, but you know, really to promote native birds, native insects, native bees, native pollinators, they need overall native species. But it's unrealistic to think that you're just going to get rid of all of the invasive species.
Yeah. And I mean, it's the world we live in. You can't just take that away right now. It's like ripping the Band-Aid off too fast.
Right. So what the mentality is that I learned, I took a really good course from Penn State Extension called The Woods in Your Backyard. So if you live in...
Wasn't that free?
No, I think it was like $35 or something. It was like eight weeks. They might have
released... I think they the next year released it, allowed it for free during the pandemic.
Okay. I would look into it. I learned a lot.
$30-$40.
It was third grade science. I forgot about all this stuff. Yeah, like I cared.
Yeah.
And I like...
Skin in the game.
But it was, you know, like that stuff, like, you know, you talk to a third grader, they know way more than I do. And then you're like, oh my God, you're so smart. And then you forget about all that stuff. Little kids drop
biology facts. Yeah. Like, yeah, mighty mitochondria.
And it was very practical.
Powerhouse of the cell.
It was very practical. And like, you know, if you have woods in your backyard or front yard or whatever, this is what you should know. And one of the things that I really took from it is, one, green does not mean good. We have a mentality that, oh, it's green, it's good. And that's not really the case.
I think I have a shirt that says green is good.
That's my shirt, by the way.
Oh, you've taken that.
No,
you've...
it's my shirt.
No, it's that Reef one. That green is good. It's like on the side here.
Okay. We both have shirts that say green is good then.
Damn it.
But like, it's like a practical look, right? So when we're walking around, if you see a native plant, bush, whatever, and there it's kind of being encroached upon by a non-native or an invasive species, that's a good opportunity to cut the invasive species to allow the native species to flourish. And that's something that we did at our old farm.
Oh yeah. Slow and steady. You did more than me, but well, yeah, slow and steady.
I would be like, cut this. We saw a difference though. It was huge. Yeah. And the thing is the native species take off. And we're
like, holy shit, we didn't know this was going to take off. And it was like bounty of, yeah.
Yeah.
So rad.
It's really great. So I think that that's just like an easy way to really transform a space and to to give legs to native species, and you're doing, but you're not like ripping up all the invasives, because that's just overwhelming and impossible.
Now's the time to walk around, though. Get bring your phone. It's rare that I'm going to be like, hey, go on a nature walk and bring your phone, but get one of the apps. We love Seek.
Seek's a bitch sometimes, and it's like, yeah, how are you not reading this internet right now?
Take those pictures, figure out what it is, because as the blooms are popping is like kind of the easiest time to tell what a lot of stuff is.
And our mentality is like, there's an autumn olive that's beautiful. That's, we're like, oh my God, what is this? It's like the most blooming autumn olive I've ever seen. But it's by itself. And we're like, you know what? We're not cutting you down. Dog. Yeah. And it's just a slow process, but you can get a leg up.
So it's taken us 15 episodes to like think of a good idea, but I think this is a good idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
Okay, we've had good ideas.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. What are you talking about?
A good marketing idea.
Okay. We want to share. Really, what we want to do is we want to share Cara Jo skincare with you.
Yeah, but you know, get you to buy some shit. This episode is brought to you by
Cara Jo skincare and Bee Farm.
All right, so here's the deal. I'm gonna give you a coupon code, or Cara's gonna give you a coupon code. Do you know what you want it to be?
Yeah, you got it. You got it written down there. So don't pretend like you don't.
Well, I don't know if we settled on the name of it or anything.
I think that's a good one.
We're going to, what do we do? 10 people?
10 people. Sound, all right. Listen, if 10 people use this, we'll be
sick.
We'll be really happy.
It'll be like the same 10 people that are already buying stuff. Like, damn it, we cost ourselves money. No, 10 people, doesn't matter if you're a repeat customer, whatever. We're going to put a coupon code, or I don't know what it's called, on our website, but
It's a coupon code.
It's for $10. $10 off. You can buy anything. And it is going to be springtime 10.
And you get $10 off your order.
So it'll work for 10 people. Get $10 off. Hey, maybe it'll bring us some business.
And really, I mean, yeah, obviously business. But like, I want people to try our stuff. Like, I'm making shampoo today.
Dude, so many people are trying our stuff. So many people are hooked on the stuff. But like, it'd be cool to expand even more.
Yeah. I made shampoo today, which is just shampoo bar. You getting rid of plastic. I was just like buying shampoo and throwing out plastic bottles. I'm like, I can't keep doing this. The shampoo bar is amazing.
We grind up little chickens and
no, we don't.
No, it's animal cruelty free. I just laugh at saying it's cruelty free. I was the one everything gets tested on.
Yeah. But we tested the shampoo on like a lot of people. A lot of different hair types.
Shout out to all our testers.
Yeah. Like the bug repellent is amazing.
Now is the time for the bug repellent.
It's a tick repellent. It's a mosquito repellent. We just got lots of good stuff. So you should try it out. Springtime 10.
And now back to your episode. So, why'd you have to laugh there?
Because it was funny.
I went out to the bee yard the other day and I was like, oh no, we've got bottom boards, but I don't have any lids. So like, you know, we're kind of doubling our apiary every year at this point now. And I buy the boxes. So we use all mediums. I buy the woodenware unassembled. We paint them and then we spray paint them and have fun with people. But I used to make the boxes. It's just too much and it's not that cost effective. But making lids is cost effective and making bottom boards for me is cost effective. But I used to have a workshop. I used to have this garage that for years we bought shit and grew it. So it was like, all right, we're not going to buy a dining room table, but I'm going to buy a table saw and make a dining room table. And we grew like a really great wood shop, Hurricane Ida, whatever. You don't have that here anymore. But you're making
dough.
Chop saw, and I have a handheld circular saw thing. And I figured out still that I could make lids and bottom boards, but I just did lids this time with the stuff I had, and it was still way cost effective. So I don't need to give you the whole rundown of what I do, but I've been making equipment for all 7 or 8 years we've been doing this, and this is the first lid that I've made 2 years back to back because I really dig it. I love migratory lids now. I don't think they need a top entrance. The bees don't need a top entrance. So you use a migratory lid. It goes, you know, it's flush on that top box.
Where we live, we're not getting like feet of snow.
Yeah. Well, in the wintertime, I put an entrance up there.
Because of the feeders. The way I do it is just a
piece of plywood with a couple holes in it. Like, it's super not something I use during the year.
Yeah, they weigh like 10 pounds each.
Yeah, but whatever. During the year, we don't use any undercover. What I use, though, is Bee Culture magazine. They're online, beeculture.com. If you search like migratory cover DIY or migratory cover plan Bee Culture, you'd find the exact one that we use. But one piece of plywood gets you like 8 lids.
And they can be used for 8 frames and 10 frames because we have a mixture. 8 or 10,
exactly. And then I just kind of figured out the wood I would buy before, I would use our table saw or our, you know, I had a routing table I would use and do stuff. But I found the plywood's the most expensive part, but then I used 1-inch by 4-inch by 8-foot wood pine white pine boards. Each one of those is $8, and that was enough for the side lips of the migratory covers to make 6 of them, I think. And then I found a 50-pack of 1/4-inch like lathe shims, but they're not shims because they're 1/4-inch thick through and through, but 1/4-inch by like, I don't know, 2 inches by 4 feet, a 50-pack for $20. And that's like the side lip that you need for the migratory lid. And I was like, oh my God, this is like, I mean, I think I figured out I saved about $100.
Nice.
So, you know, it took like 2 or 3 hours.
Outside, beautiful days.
Yeah, great day doing it. And then I use a wood stain that I already had from Vermont. Vermont Naturals, I think. It's a good stain. I think it's Vermont Naturals. And then I had like, what's that shit? Flex Seal, spray paint seal. I was like, all right, I already have this. Let me try this out. And I used that and actually made like a rubber coating to the top of them that seems pretty dynamite.
Yeah, I mean, they're out in the rain right now on the porch and it beaded
right off. Yeah, it was looking great. So I was able to use some of the stuff that I already had, but like found a way to do it. So look into what you can do, and maybe there's some things that you can find that you save yourself money or that's just easier. And for me, migratory lids and also the bottom boards, I'll talk about them later. Bottom boards are so easy to make, and you know, just saves like $15 per one pretty much with making them.
Nice.
And yeah, are we gonna have Thom on soon?
We sure are. I mean, I haven't talked to him, but he was super stoked about it. We have a friend that is an organic farmer.
Yeah.
The farm used to be like right across the street from us at our old place, and he and his brother, I volunteered there, spent the day with them over my spring break, and it's Everwild Farms. Yeah. And Horsham. I think it's just farm.
Everwild Farm.
And it's Ambler.
Oh, it is Ambler.
Yes, specifically, cool. You know, Ambler.
Touche.
I'm going there once a week in the summer just to kind of get my hands in the dirt and like get out of the house and spend time with good people. And so Thom had a talk on, what was it? Regenerative farming.
It was through Back to Earth Compost.
No, it wasn't Back to Earth. Oh, it was something else.
She just connected the dots.
No, I did. My thing was through Back to Earth. And
he's gonna do one for her.
And it was really good. And it's like, oh my God, I'm doing this stuff. So I thought it would be great if he came on and talked about just regenerative soil. Like, you don't have to be a farmer to be doing this stuff.
Dude, what is with the Zoom conferences and the Zoom meetings, presentations? I love that they exist, right? So it's so good. I would never probably tune into, I would never like drive to like Westchester University and sit in on a regenerative soil lecture. Or maybe I would, but I'm way more likely to be like, oh wait, I can just sign up for this Zoom talk and listen to it while I make dinner.
Yeah, it's so great. That is sweet. Like one good thing that came out of
pandemic. So many more talks. However, What's with the people that at the end of the conversation or in the middle of the conversation have to be like, hello, everyone. I'd like to tell you how smart I am.
Yeah, I just did a talk. Well, I watched Tom's talk and everybody was like, but I know all this stuff. And he was like, okay. So after I watched his, I knew they were going to do that to me.
There's just like a percentage of people that I think they tune in just so they can make comments about how smart they are at the end. And not even ask a question. They just go like, this is what I know. Yes. And the person's like, are you going to ask a question?
Also, like, I think they're taking notes the entire time. Like, how am I going to counter this? Like, this is not an argument. I'm just presenting my information. You don't have to agree with it, even though it's fact-based and science. Like, it's just, but, you know, that's just what it is.
I mean, whatever. There's people that'll probably get pissed off and send me very mean mail about saying I killed a hive that was diseased that
have
I didn't feel comfortable about.
Quote unquote mean mail.
Oh yeah, about stinging myself for bee venom therapy.
Right. Yeah.
They came out in droves.
Yeah. Well, Marissa Magnata is loving your bee stinging yourself.
There are pets that we kill sometimes for our own benefit. No, I'm kidding.
So we're gonna do an episode with him, which will be awesome. And then
we still gotta do it. Yeah. I mean, dude, life gets in the way.
Nah,
but Mike Landers.
Yeah, we
Instagram,
talked about this before. Yeah.
Landers drinks. He's got a bar come in called Bar Sylvia.
We're gonna do a cocktail episode.
We're
I promise.
Do a cocktail
I was like, right, if we keep talking about it, it will happen.
It's gonna happen. It's not
yeah,
even
of course.
Just life gets in the way a little bit, and we're a little busy in the spring. But yeah, we're totally gonna make that happen. So that'll be just like fun. A couple people that we really are excited about that just we know have rad information.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I've been drinking this Dancing Gnome Kolsch. It's called Not Always Present this whole time. And I just feel like I got to give them a shout out because this beer is nice. Dancing Gnome Brewery in Pittsburgh a couple weeks ago. Went out to Pittsburgh for some beer stuff. Hung out with them and I really dig what they're doing. So, you know, Dancing Gnome, if you get a chance to check them out. They started distributing at least around Pennsylvania. I think I saw maybe pop up in New York.
Good for them.
But they're definitely like all across PA now for sure. Yeah, try them out. Dancing Gnome. They're cool.
Sweet. I'm drinking Spring Friend by Forest of Maine. That is a delish Saison.
Dude, this Saison friends are so good.
Yeah, always.
Spring Friend's always my favorite.
Me too, for sure.
We had a few questions, I think. So we talked about swarms last episode, and we talked about bee math, and the two really do interchange quite a bit when it comes to figuring out whether you need to be worried about secondary swarms. So our ideal situation, you find a swarm cell. Ooh, we got it. It hasn't been capped yet. You find the queen. You move the queen along with like five frames. You start a new hive. That's how we love doing splits. We talked about that multiple times all last episode. If you find those swarm cells at a very early stage, we're talking days 1 through 4, maybe 1 through 5, maybe. When you find them that young and you cut them out, there's a chance that the bees are still turning eggs into swarm cells. So what you may find, Duncan crushing water in the background right now. But what you may find is you think you cut down the swarm cells to just 2 or 3, but then all of a sudden 2 weeks later, 2.5 weeks later, there's a secondary or a tertiary or a fourth swarm happening. And it's because they kept converting eggs into queen cells. So when you're doing a split that way, understand the bee math. If you see early cells, know, all right, I got to come back in like a little bit. You've taken the queen, so you know that you have some time, right? So if you're talking day 4 cells and you've already taken the queen, they're not going to be able to go on that secondary flight for what? You know, the queen hatches at day 16. So right there, you've got yourself like 2 weeks. And then they take like 4 to 6 days to harden so they can fly, right? So you got like 2 weeks. Maybe a little harder if you go in and there's virgin queens everywhere and you got to start catching virgins versus if you go back in 6, 7, 8 days when you know the cells are capped and closed.
Way easier option.
Yeah. So do the math. Be like, all right, I think that those cells were X amount of days. Try to get there right before you think they would be 16 days old when they're going to start emerging. And then you have a really good snapshot of, okay, shit, there's 15 cells now, not 3. Clean them up, close them up. Don't worry about it for another 2-3 weeks.
But careful while you... pull them apart.
And that's something too. When you're cleaning your cells up, think about that. Don't leave cells that are protruding in awkward positions that might be a problem lifting frames in the future, or might just be a problem as they develop like into a little bit of a wonky situation. Bigger is not always better. You want it to be clean on the frame so that if you have to go back, you're not worried about breaking it, blah, blah, blah.
It's interesting. So we just went
think
in,
a little bit more. Yeah.
We went in last week to do this exact thing and, you know, we're ripping some cells and what happened? You were like, oh, there's a virgin queen right here.
I opened a box or I lifted a frame that I had marked an X on.
Yeah.
Because I just put an X or a double X on a frame that has swarm cells just so I know to be careful. And I pull it up and sure enough, a little bit of the tip ripped right off when I lifted it. And
like
I look
side. Yeah.
And all of a sudden she walks out.
Yeah.
And she looked totally fine. She didn't look like she had more development.
No, she looked like she was ready to come out.
Yeah.
I was like, I've seen them like
a day
there.
Early where I'm like, oh,
yeah,
she was so close. And yeah. They're just not there. She looked good.
But she wasn't like flipped around. She was, her tail was still at the base of
She was money.
But I said to Craig, like, butterflies, they say, need the struggle to get out of the cocoon to help their wings get strong. So I was saying, I wonder, we probably will never know. But
we saw her and then we said,
well, that was the only
good.
Option.
And we closed up and walked
there
away.
There was no other option.
We could have grabbed her and gone, let one of the other ones hatch out in case she was bad.
Right. But like the fact that we kind of like took her out of her cell, I wonder what kind of repercussion that is just to her.
Wings not developed strong enough because it was an hour less in the cell.
Yeah. So I just thought that was an interesting thing to think about.
But yeah, just a little more to think about when it comes to make sure you're not leaving more than two or three swarm cells or else you will run into situations with secondary, tertiary, blah, blah, blah swarms.
And then there was another question about queen excluders.
I wish I remembered who it was, but she sent like a couple pictures of her with hives and with her daughter and with
I want to see.
You've got mind your hives too.
I know.
It's not just me. But anyway, she said, hey, this is our situation. We're in, I think it was Ohio, but how do you guys use queen excluders? Loaded question.
Yeah,
ask two beekeepers, you're going to get seven answers. So I just wanted to give a quick little rundown. We don't use queen excluders that often. There are situations that we do, and there's situations that other people use them that we don't. A lot of people are just like, hey, the brood chamber is the brood chamber, and then I'm putting a queen excluder on top of it, and the rest are my supers. That's totally fine. That's a way of doing it. A lot of beekeepers refer to queen excluders as honey excluders. I personally, like, especially in the springtime, I want those bees to be able to move freely throughout. I want them to have as much space. I want them to feel like they have as much space as they need. And I think it helps prevent swarming and just keeps them in a little bit more of a natural state, even though we're in this unnatural box we put them in. But let them, you know, if they want to lay brood in the fourth box, so be it. Once we're like a little through spring and just they're booming and, you know, splits have been made and we're starting to really super hives, there might be a time that I go, okay, the queen's in the bottom box. Let's put a queen excluder above that third box. We know she's down there. Let's let any brood that's been in these top supers, let it hatch out and then let them backfill. And we know it's honey.
And especially last year, we were taking any natural comb because bees, I think like they want their comb to be like one third drone comb. Or I don't know the exact number.
Yeah,
but
so because we're using plastic foundation that has a specific size cell already etched into it.
Worker comb.
It's worker size cell. It's like smaller to prevent them from making too much drone brood.
So if
comb.
You put in a natural frame where there's no foundation, they will make usually drone comb. So we were taking that drone comb, putting it on top above a queen excluder, letting it hatch out. And then they were filling that with honey, and it was just like comb, beautiful, yummy comb honey. Yeah.
Yeah. So we use it for cut comb. I was going to talk about exactly that. So, yeah, that is a way of using queen excluders just to make sure your cut comb isn't getting full of, you know, brood at any time.
I do know someone, I don't know if this is bad practice, but like someone in our bee club puts the queen excluder at the bottom so that there can't be like swarms or something.
I mean, that's a way of trapping a queen.
Yeah.
You know, people clip the wings of a queen so that they can't swarm. Again, I'm going like, I'm trying to be as natural as possible. I'm not trying to totally get in their way. If,
right.
if me as a bad beekeeper can't keep those bees from swarming, that's on me. But you know, there, I'm sure there are situations, and I've had mentees that I've said, hey, you can't get it in tomorrow, man. Maybe you throw that excluder on the bottom just to try to protect. However, I think the bees will eventually thin her down so she can get through the excluder because they thin down the queens
right,
so they, so can, they fly. Can fly. So I'm not even sure you're doing it. It just sounds like you're making more work for the bees. And I think they kind of get beat up, like squeezing through the excluder.
I would think
even
that's
the workers
not...
get a little beat up.
Yeah.
Especially
when they're first coming in.
When you need to get frames built. So you're a new beekeeper and you need built frames. Honeybees are a lot less likely to build out frames above an excluder. In my mind, they're building out frames for the queen to be able to lay. And they're going, we need to make frames so the queen can lay eggs, especially early in the season. Later on in the season, I think they have the mindset of we need to store and we need to create our winter stores. But in the springtime, I think they're like, look, the queen can't get up there, so I'm not going to build up there. I like to, when I don't use a queen excluder, this is something that we do. So, you know, again, you're like in the flow. It's like late spring. I will rearrange the hive. I will take some, I'll take some cells that have nectar or capped honey. It's honey at that point, you know, capped nectar, but honey. And I will make that fourth box, that first super, I will make sure it is all honey or all nectar. And by doing that, the queen won't pass over those frames. So she, you know, what is it, like 5.5 inches or something of honey? The queen's like, there's no reason for me to go up above this because there's nowhere for me to lay. She just has it in her head that everything above is now stores. And you're creating a natural queen barrier. So we do that at a lot of hives in the middle of the late spring, early summer, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I don't know. I one beekeeper, I just gave four answers
there
to
you go.
Queen excluders. The other thing you can use queen excluders on, you need to find your queen.
Oh, that's a good way.
You say you have four boxes, you need to find your queen. You put that excluder in the center, you know, in between above the second box. Wait a few days, come back where you find fresh eggs, you know she's up there. So, all right, you're going to make a split like that. You've now isolated the queen. You know which boxes she's in. Done. So using it as a resource, maybe more than using it in just practice.
Yeah, it's like a tool.
As a tool, yeah. I said resource. I meant to say tool. So, yeah, there's the roundabout non-answer for that question.
There you go. Oh, it's just some things to think about, and then you can make your own choice.
Yeah, so this was a fun episode. I love the kind of like updates. It wasn't like anything specific. We just kind of like, this is what we're doing. This is what's going on.
I feel like there's a lot of information.
You know, we got a bunch of plants in our greenhouse. It's exciting. Spring brings me life. I mean, it's supposed to bring life, right?
And yeah.
It totally brings me life. I like that.
Me too.
I hope everybody feels the same way. I hope spring is bringing y'all life. I hope that you've already used our $10 off coupon code for carajoskincare.com. Probably should have mentioned that, where to go, but if you can't figure that out, you probably shouldn't be a beekeeper.
If they're listening to podcasts, they can find websites.
Yeah, carajoskincare.com, coupon code SPRINGTIME10, all one word. It's going to get you $10 off.
First
10 or so people.
Yeah, enjoy it.
Thanks for listening. If you've gotten this far,
you're a rock star.
We really appreciate it.
Bye, y'all.
Shout out again, Marissa. Thanks for the shout out.
Thanks, Marissa.
Hope you all have a great rest of your day. Peace.